not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody. So glad to be with you today here on the Guy James Show, high atop the TIB network building here in beautiful Southwest Florida. Very, very happy for all of you to be along with us today. Raining here today. Always update you on the weather. So we got a little bit of rain here today. Not a whole lot, but I understand it's nice up north, up in the Midwest. I heard from there today, and they told me it was a beautiful day. People out and working in the yards and all that. And, of course, it's warm out west, and, well, it's nice every place right now. It's getting to be spring. So hope you're having a good day on this April 11th. Hope to have an interesting show for you today. Of course, you can call us at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. My, oh my, oh my. Will wonders never cease? I think Newt Gingrich listened to the show yesterday. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. Why do I know that? Remember we said halfway through the show yesterday that only the dead and the stupid never change their opinions. Newt Gingrich told a group yesterday at the University of South Dakota that the United States should pull out of Iraq and leave a small force there just as it did in post-war Korea and Germany.
Oh, Elizabeth, honey, I'm coming home to joy. I think I'm having the big one. I think I'm. This is going to kill me.
Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich has changed his mind on the Iraq war. Think about that. He said it was an enormous mistake for us to try and occupy that country after June of 2003. He said during a question and answer session at the school, we have to pull back and we have to recognize it. I just can't get over it. The Republicans are now running just as fast as they can to get away from George W. Bush, flip-flopping on Iraq because it's now become a civil war. Don't forget what people like Nudie Boy said a long time ago, and I'll quote him. He was on Fox not that long ago. This has been, well, a year and a half ago. He's on Hannity and Combs, and I quote him saying, "And instead of applauding this deliberate effort to minimize American casualties and to strengthen the Iraqis, we have some of our friends here at home who want it both ways. They want to complain that we're not winning fast enough, and they want to complain if we take any casualties. You can't have it both ways." That's Newt Gingrich. Wow. Now he's talking like John Kerry and Jack Murtha. And I'm just shocked. I really am. Newt Gingrich. That's what these Republicans always do. They get us in the messes, and then the Democrats have to get us out of the trouble. That's what it's going to be. But the sky is falling. Newt Gingrich says we got to get out of Iraq. I know all of you keep up with the polls that come out. There's so many polls that come out, and as everyone has noticed, the polls haven't been very good to Junior Bush lately. Some of the polls show some small fluctuations, but the overall trend is that he's been dropping like a rock. And I think we can safely say that Bush's presidency, his legacy or whatever, is now set in stone. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The people have made up their minds. And it's not going to be pretty for George Jr. Bush. His legacy is not going to be great. Not going to be good. It's going to be pretty doggone bad. His speeches, the 24/7 spin, the nonstop right-wing talking heads, nothing seems to work for them now. Junior Bush and his people have tried and tried and tried to make the public think differently of him, and he's been some kind of knight in shining armor riding in on a white horse and leading us to victory over the rest of the world. That's what he thinks. And Junior, I got news for you. The public isn't buying that anymore. The big problem for the Republican Party is that the Bushy boy is dragging all of them down into the cesspool with him. They're all identified as having sucked up to him and his ill-begotten policies that land us in Iraq. And as a nation, here we are in Iraq, and we're nearly in bankrupt court as a nation. Somewhere between 33 and 36% of the public approves of his job performance now, and there's no indication that I can see that his numbers won't fall some more. I've been surprised, and I said a while back that I didn't think they could get much lower. Actually, I think they will continue to erode his poll numbers. And the problem here is I think he's got something really horrible in mind. Don't sell him short. Something that he thinks will get the country behind him like like folks were right after 9/11. I think he's caught up in the feeling that he'll find a way to stand on another pile of rubble with another bullhorn and proclaim that he's the conquering hero. I really think he believes he's another George Patton, when in fact the public sees him more like Elmer Fudd or Wile E. Coyote. It really appears that there is no way for him to salvage any kind of legacy other than that of a miserable failure in almost every conceivable category that a president can be judged upon. He's been under 50% for almost a year now. But when you look at the overall trend of the polls, the most devastating poll number is that 47% strongly disapprove of Junior Bush's handling of the presidency, which is more than double the number of outright morons who strongly approve. And you have to think by now that if everybody that votes on that strongly approve, which is 22 or 23%, if you're somebody that votes that you strongly approve of this administration, you really need another visit to the psychiatrist. There's something seriously wrong with you. Seriously wrong with you. This marks the second straight month that the percentage of those who think he's a miserable failure is higher than his job approval. Keep in mind now about these polls that the worst that it ever got for Bill Clinton was 33%. The strongly disapproved number. The first ever got was 33%, and Bush's up to 47. But here's the worst news for Mr. Bush in this poll. His job approval rating has remained below 50% for almost a year. And perhaps more ominous for the president, 47% again to say that they strongly disapprove. And there's 22% to say that they strongly approve. There's now less than 7 months left before the midterm elections. And this is where this all ties together. This next election, without question, is going to be a referendum on the war. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And Bush seems to be casting a long, long, long shadow over the Republicans that they just might not escape from. Only 35% of the people, according to the latest polls, approve of the way the Republican majority Congress is performing its function. That's the worst figure for the Republicans in over 9 years. It can be argued that the war did this to Bush, and it can also be argued, and it's my view, that all of this is a result of several important issues that's caused Bush to become, well, he's become a pariah to his own party. This isn't, as the Republicans would have you believe, the result of any bad luck. You know, you've heard him many times say, oh, well, you know, he's been so unlucky. He inherited a recession from Clinton, which is bunk, and he had 9/11, and he had this, and he had that. Now, when it comes all down to it, this is of his and his party's own doing. He and his whole gang in Washington have done this to themselves. Remember how the Republican spin declared that before the 2004 election that it would be a very bad thing to change leaders in the member of the war, in the middle of a war? You remember that argument? Lots of them were saying that. Well, as it turns out, it's been a catastrophe for this nation that he stole another election. Is there any doubt? And they're always talking about aid and comfort to the enemies. Is there any doubt that our enemies have taken great comfort that we've got such a weak and ineffectual man leading this country? You know, Bin Laden's got to be someplace laughing his ass off. You know he is. I'm sure y'all remember the fact that the PNAC group was seemingly hoping for, as they put it, another Pearl Harbor. Well, I don't think it's going to help him this time, because the great majority of Americans now realize that he's just not trustworthy. He just isn't. And he's proven that over and over and over again here lately. Even the fundy base, his fundamentalist Christian base, seems to be walking away from him right now. The LeakGate scandal, the illegal wiretapping, his stance on immigration issues is way off the mark for the hardcore conservatives, whom it appears to me would like nothing better than to build a 100-foot-high concrete fence on the border and shoot anybody that made it over. Man, there's some of them that are, got some nasty ideas about that. And let's just face the fact that with this latest squirming to get out of the LeakGate mess, he's had too many of those moments. I would call them, it depends on what is moments. He's just had too many of those. And people aren't buying his malarkey anymore. Even the most dedicated Bush people are falling off the side now. A public that was willing to give him the doubt, the benefit of the doubt on some of these lies, has now wised up. And you know, after a while, saying, hey, wait a minute. Just how many times can we listen to these far-fetched excuses and continue to believe you, Mr. Bush? Politics, being what it is, will always cause differences of opinion on policies. That's a given. But what the public will not accept is one outrageous, unbelievable explanation of the facts after another after another. Americans are smarter than that. And sooner or later, the American public starts to smell incompetence and deception, albeit later than we should have this time. But sooner or later, the truth was going to come out about George Bush. It had to. You know, to steal from an old story, George Bush sat on a wall. George Bush had a great fall, and all of Rove's men and all of his spin couldn't put Georgie Bush back together again, and I don't think there's going to be anything saving this time. I think he's gotten in just a little bit too deep. People in his own party, very, very effective Republicans, people that have been hardcore Republicans for a long time that conservatives admire, are starting to jump off the ship. You know, it wouldn't be so bad, but Bush was quoted as saying America wants an honest president who says what he means and mean what he says. You remember that? I'm tired of hearing him say it. America wants an honest president who says what he means and mean what he says, or some such mangled phrase. You know, it's hard to keep up with the ways this guy's butchered the English language, but that's the gist of it. You know what I'm saying. I want you to please remember that just last week, this guy said, and I quote, I think I've got it right, in order to be effective, in order to maintain credibility, words have got to mean something, he said in that speech last week. You just can't say things in the job I'm in and not mean what you say, unquote. Anyway, the phrase meaning what he says might just be the epitaph on his political tombstone, as far as I'm concerned. It might just signal the beginning of the end of his presidency, and God, I hope so. I know you all remember when he was first selected by the Supreme Court as our president. His minions were constantly crowing about how this guy would restore integrity and honor to the White House. Have you heard any of that from his followers lately? Is Is anyone claiming anything about honor and dignity nowadays? Not hardly. Here's a guy, this president, when you look out throughout his entire life, he wouldn't know the truth if it bit him in the ass. He's surrounded himself with other consummate liars, too. They seem to seek each other out. Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, McClellan. In a way, I almost feel sorry for Scotty McClellan. He's put on that White House press gaggle barbecue every single day. But these guys could carry away all the hardware at the annual Liars Convention. Hell, even Nixon's people were a bunch of rubes compared to these guys. Bush's presidency is now going to be framed by the fact that he's the biggest liar in presidential history and probably the most incompetent, too. And you'll have to admit that those two traits in one man spells trouble for our country, and I believe his administration's been nothing but trouble. You'd be hard-pressed to tell us anything positive of note that he's achieved during his years in the White House. His war, a total failure. Social Security reform, failure. What else? Healthcare reform, failure. Domestic security, our ports, our railways, our failure. Economic policies, huge failure. Protecting our standing with the rest of the world, failure. And to borrow their phrase, restoring honor and dignity in the White House, total failure. And one that always makes me laugh. He's a uniter instead of a divider. Massive failure. Don't think there's ever been more of a divider in the White House. We can only hope that the man will keep his word just this once and get rid of the person who did the leaking. Resign, Mr. Bush. It's the only honorable thing you could do right now. For the sake of the country you claim to love, resign now. And allow someone else to clean up this awful mess you've left us with. And oh yes, one more request. Take Dick Cheney with you. That'd be a beautiful sight, wouldn't it? We've got a lot to talk about today, and we're going to talk a little later on, whenever you choose, about this insanity about going into Iran. Now, last night, of course, all the spinmeisters, the right-wing spinmeisters on the right-wing shows, I watched some tidbits of some of them, all saying that Cy Hirsch doesn't know what he's talking about. Oh, well, Cy Hirsch never knows what he... I heard one pundit say Cy Hirsch never has anything right. Au contraire. Cy Hirsch is one hell of a good reporter. A great journalist. And he gets it right most of the time. And when a man of Cy Hirsch's stature sticks his neck on the line and predicts something... Actually, he's not predicting. He's telling the story as he heard it that... The Pentagon is making plans to go into Iraq and use tactical nukes on them at the behest of the Bush administration. That's something to take pretty serious from a journalist of Cy Hirsch's stature. He's not going to come out and say that if he's got nothing to back it up. Cy Hirsch has been just as good at raking over Democrats over the years as he has this president. People need to remember that. He had a field day with Bill Clinton. They all did. So that's something that's very worrisome right now, this Iran mess. And like we mentioned yesterday, you're starting to hear these same stories. Oh, we're being threatened and the nukes, you know, they can... It's Iraq all over again. It really is. And here we are yesterday with Bush giving this speech to the group he was in front of. I can't remember what group it was. But he gave that pathetic little speech and then answered questions to the best of his ability, which isn't very much. And here he is talking about the letter from Zakari to bin Laden that they captured. He's telling us all about that letter when at the same time it's being reported in the Washington Press that that letter was a phony. That it didn't happen. And here's Bush using it to make his case at the speech. And down at the other end of D.C., the press and everybody's coming out saying, well, no, that letter did not say anything like that. Are we going to be led into another war in the Middle East? Are we going to be in a war with Iran at the same time we're still trying to win militarily in Iraq while we're still knee-deep in a mess in Afghanistan? Is this going to be World War III in the Middle East? It could easily be that. These people want us out of there. I don't think, no one's convinced me that they had this this big jihad against the West before the West started messing with them. They want us out. You know, it seems like in the last few centuries, every few years, that we Westerners have showed up somewhere in the Middle East with our military, our guns, our tanks, our missiles and all that. We've showed up there and made life miserable for those people, saying that we were going to spread democracy. And they've yet to have their democracy. Oh, sure. They'd like to have democracy just like anybody else, but they want their style of democracy, not what we want necessarily. They want a little democracy here, a little there. But most of all, they just want to be left alone. They don't want our culture. When will we learn that? When will we ever learn that? I don't know. I hope we do some of these times soon. I don't know how long that we can go on pretending that this is just fine. It is not. Well, we're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go anywhere.
America, 2002, a world at war, a government of the people becomes a government of corporations. Hundreds are imprisoned without due process of law. Public policy is dictated by oil company executives. Profit becomes more important than life itself.
Democracy! Is anybody there? Democracy! Does anybody care about our democracy? Is anybody there? Democracy! Does anybody care about our democracy? Democracy! 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 Will you give up the right to vote? To buy a bigger house and boat? Or will you stand up and fight for liberty? Will you let them tap your phone till your private life is known by the man who doesn't give a damn about our democracy? Is anybody there? Democracy! Does anybody care about our democracy? Is anybody there? Democracy! 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 Is this the silence of the lambs? Or will we fight these corporate scams?
Corporate scams!
Rise up and show them that we've got a voice.
We are the people!
Or will we be bought and sold?
Bought and sold!
Shut up and do what we're told. Bow down to the king till we have no choice
to save our democracy.
Is anybody there?
Democracy.
Does anybody care?
just who appointed you king of this country.
I'm not your pawn.
We're not pawns to be played like fools.
Let freedom ring.
This is not a dictatorship or a monarchy.
Truth
no, this country belongs
on.
To we, the people,
democracy.
Is anybody there?
Democracy.
Is anybody there?
Democracy.
Does anybody care about our
democracy? Democracy. Democracy. Democracy.
So in my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, speech to the nation. I asked Americans to give 4,000 hours over the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said, 4,000 hours.
The man's a menace.
We think so, too. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, you know, every time I hear that, of course, you know, I'm a bit biased, just a wee bit. Has there been any other presidents in our lifetime? Those of you that have been around a long time, like myself, and watched politics over the years, you know, I remember the Eisenhower administration very well. I don't remember anybody keeping or writing a book or keeping a list and publish it in the newspaper or magazine about all the stupid things that Dwight Eisenhower said, because he didn't say any stupid things. Did anybody write a book about Kennedyisms, about stupid things that Kennedy said? No. Even Nixon. Did anybody write down a whole list of things? Could they have published a book on stupid things that Richard Nixon said? Johnson? No. Even Gerald Ford. The lovable, laughable Gerald Ford. Couldn't even say that he said a bunch of stupid things like this president. And, of course, after that we've got Jimmy Carter. No, I'm sorry, not a bunch of stupid things. And then Ron Reagan. No, he couldn't publish as many stupid things as he was fairly good at in front of the mics. Reagan was. He was a good communicator. I'll have to say that for him. And then Bushy boy's daddy, he didn't say a bunch of stupid things. I bet he regrets saying "me read my lips, no new taxes." I bet he regrets that one. And then we had Bill Clinton. But even think of the other people that ran for president. You know, McGovern and we had Henry Cabot Lodge for vice president and Goldwater. None of those people had just reams of material written about them about stupid things they've said. And yet this man, oh my, oh my. I've been getting a lot of email here lately, and I promised you, and I'm going to keep my promise in the next few days. We want to do a show on the black box voting, and we're going to let all of you folks that I believe to the depths of your soul that the last couple of elections have been stolen, and you've seen all the proof you need. We're going to let you have your way with it, and we're going to have a couple of guests on, and we're working hard on that to do that. I'm worried that maybe the Democrats are in a position now that a simple victory in a lot of these key races won't be enough. I'm worried that we're going to have to win by huge margins, by margins so wide that when the exit polls are given and the actual results come in, that they wouldn't dare have the fix on. What do you think? Do they have enough guts that if somebody wins an election 60-40 to go ahead and turn it around because of the voting machines? You know, you better have it in mind that no matter what, in this election, these people are desperate. And they're going to be dealing from the bottom of the deck in this midterm election. They're going to do anything they can to hold down voter turnout. That's their ace in the hole, to get everybody so disgusted with political life right now that they won't go vote. And in the latest polls, as we've mentioned, the Democrats lately have emerged as the party most Americans trust to deal with such issues as Iraq and the economy and health care by a margin of 49-42%, and that's a margin that's not insignificant. Americans now trust Democrats more than they trust Republicans to do a better job of handling Iraq. That's a massive turnaround. Democrats also hold a 6% advantage over the GOP, which is 49-43%, as the party most trusted to handle the economy. And the Democrats' lead swells to double digits on such issues as immigration, 12 points there, prescription drug benefits for the elderly, 28%, because everybody in his right mind knows that nobody in the Republican Party gives a tinker's damn about health benefits for anybody, only insofar as it benefits the stockholders of the big HM, big hospital profit makers. Drug benefits for the elderly, Democrats favored by 28 points. Health care, they're favored by 32 points. And when dealing, and I think this is another number that's not insignificant. When dealing with corruption in Washington, Democrats are favored by 25 points over the Republicans. The public comes down evenly on only one issue, that's terrorism, with 46% expressing more confidence in the Democrat and 45% trusting Republicans. So that's pretty close on that one. Iraq is not going to magically get better. Osama's probably not going to be captured. He's probably cranking out some new videos right now. Their only hope in 2006 is to get down and dirty as possible and keep the voting down. And you're going to hear this more and more often as the time comes. They're going to try and convince everybody that both the parties are the same. They are. They're going to do their best. That will be the message. They know that they cannot overcome the problems they have, so they're going to grab hold and try and drag the Democrats down along with them, and everybody's got to be ready for that. And you think, oh no, they won't get so dirty in this upcoming election. How many of you read about this phone jamming scheme? It's all coming to light now as it's been leaking out and leaking out. Key figures in a phone jamming scheme designed to keep New Hampshire Democrats from voting in 2002. They have found that these folks that did that had regular contact with the White House and the Republican Party as the plan was unfolding. They now got the phone records that came out in criminal court. The records show that Bush campaign operative James Tobin, who recently was convicted in the case, he made 24 calls to the White House within a 3-day period around Election Day in 2002. As the phone jamming operation was finalized, carried out, and then abruptly shut down. Democrats brought a civil case against them, and they said in their civil case motion that they were entitled to know the purpose of the calls to government offices, and I quote them, at the time of the planning and implementation of the phone jamming conspiracy and the timing of the phone calls made by Mr. Tobin on Election Day. While national Republican officials have said they deplore such operations, the Republican National Committee said it paid, and this is the proof in the pudding, isn't it? The Republican National Committee said it paid for Tobin's defense because, and I think this is heartwarming, because he's a longtime supporter and told officials he'd committed no crime. My, 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 my. There's no place these folks won't go with this. No place at all. And you better watch out. We all better watch out, because this, you better believe the operatives are at work already. 866-546-5254. You can give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind today. And let's go to the phone. Who do we have on the phone?
This is Humble Dave, Guy.
Hi, Dave.
Two things. I was recalling that Bush Sr., when he was campaigning against Clinton, at one speech he said, I stand for anti-racism. I stand for anti-sexism. I stand for anti-Semitism.
Yeah. you're right. I remember that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. That was more slip, though. It wasn't his normal M.O. But George Jr., every time he talks, he dumps several out. But
oh, yeah.
This morning on Tom Hartman, he said that quietly, secretly, Bush had made available to his buddy Berlusconi several voting machines, and that it appears that it did turn several votes around, several million votes, because he was favored to win by a significant margin. And it was very close, was the latest result. I don't know if you've heard any more on
that. I haven't heard the very latest on that.
Had you heard that some machines were made available to him?
No, I didn't. I tell you the truth, Dave. I was under the impression they still voted the old-fashioned way.
They do. They actually vote paper and pencil. But according to Tom, who's usually pretty much right on, he said that Bush had made available to him a few of the voting machines in
wow.
districts where it was going to be hard for him to carry.
Jeez.
So,
well, that's that's an MO of this administration. I give them one thing. They've had balls. They've been right out in front of everybody with it. They really have. They've not been timid at all about some of the things they wanted to do. It's just been in your face and so outrageous as. I'm trying to think who was it. Hermann Göring, one of those, said, you know, if you're going to tell a lie, tell one so big that people would never believe that you'd lie that much, and then they'll believe you. So I think
it, and that is their MO, isn't it? Things they do are just like, oh, I can't believe they did that, you know? And
people hear and go, oh, my God, no, that can't be, you know, it's got to be true. They wouldn't lie about a thing like that. I mean, yeah, that happens all the time with these people.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. Interesting. We're going to do something about this show, about these black box voting and all that and other little tidbits.
I know it, and I'm looking forward to that, Guy. And
we're going to give everybody a couple of days' notice on it. It's really hard to coordinate. I want to have two or three interviews with two or three people that I'm talking to, and I'm trying to get a day where I can have them all on at the same time. Boy, a lot of these people are they're wanted by a lot of people to talk to them.
It's getting out that more and more, I think, people are learning that rigged elections are what the GOP is all about.
Right. Yeah, it is. And we're going to have to watch out. I mean, we really are. I don't think we're in a position to win any elections by huge amounts. So if it's close, close votes are their ally and when they're running the voting machine. So.
Well, under the Help America to Vote, they've required that one Diebold machine be put into virtually every precinct. And so one machine can produce, you know, several hundred thousand votes, however they want them to go. And if you say, well, there aren't that many people in this precinct, we demand a recount. There's nothing to be recounted. The machines don't leave any record, and that's their way of doing it.
Well, as I recall, in Columbus, Ohio, I'm trying to think of the suburb. And I know Columbus very well, down in the southern end of Columbus. Anyway, one of the suburbs of Columbus had several thousand more votes than people in the precinct.
Yes, right.
And nothing.
I was going to bet that's what happened in Italy too, wherever they had to, because I don't think they got that many machines in. So it came down to where it appears that the opponent is just barely winning, and the Berlusconi is demanding a recount, but again, if it's on the machines, that won't be possible.
Well, I hope all this gets settled one way or another. I'm hoping that they'll be foolish enough to be so brazen to try some of it out in the open this time, and somebody actually catch them with their hand in a cookie jar with with recordings, with photos, with fingerprints, with everything that you need. Maybe even a little DNA in there.
I'm going to try to dig it up, but if you have anybody there with you today, maybe you see if I'm giving you the straight scoop, if he did indeed loan him some of these voting machines, and if that's where the election swung.
Well, I don't know. You know, have the official results been announced yet?
I don't think so. It looked like the opposition was winning at just barely instead of by the 8 or 9 million votes that they had anticipated.
Well, Berlusconi made some rather odd statements and actually had some rather troubling behavior in the last month during that while that was all going over there. It seems like he got a little whacked out. I don't know what... But anyway, he had some very, very strange statements to make and some behavior that wasn't...
But he owns the media.
Yeah, yeah, he does. I guess we know what that's like. Hey, Dave, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Gary.
Good to hear from you. Berlusconi, I don't know for sure whether that election has actually been called yet or not. I haven't been up on it today like I should have. But it's going to be interesting. I think Bush's friends all around the world may start to fall. And I think anybody that sucked up to George Bush to get curry favor with the United States to get their money and their military hardware and all the things that other countries do to befriend, you know how it is. You know how the weasels that come along and befriend the local bully just so they keep getting their ass kicked. That's how it always went. I admire a great deal, General, that we talked about Tony Zinni yesterday and Lieutenant General Greg Newbold, recently retired, but he has come out and gone on record about Bush's war. And, you know, he went along and said never again, we thought never again would our military senior leaders remain silent as American troops were marched off to an ill-considered engagement. It's 35 years later now, and the judgment is in. Who had it wrong? We've been fooled again. And this general made us lots of statements about it here lately. From 2000 until October 2002, I was a Marine Corps Lieutenant General and Director of Operations for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's no small office, believe me. After 9/11... Remember now, this is a lieutenant general, a much respected lieutenant general. I was a witness and therefore a party to the actions that led us to the invasion of Iraq, an unnecessary war. Inside the military family, I made no secret of my view that the zealots' rationale for war made no sense. And I think I was outspoken enough to make those senior to me very uncomfortable. But I now regret that I did not more openly challenge those who were determined to invade a country whose actions were peripheral to the real threat, Al-Qaeda. I retired from the military 4 months before the invasion, in part because of my opposition to those who had used 9/11's tragedy to hijack our security policy. And until now, I have resisted speaking out in public. I've been silent long enough. I'm driven to action now by the missteps and misjudgment of the White House and the Pentagon, and by my many painful visits to our military hospitals. In those places, I've been both inspired and shaken by the broken bodies but unbroken spirits of soldiers, Marines and corpsmen returning from this war. The cost of flawed leadership continues to be paid in blood. The willingness of our force to shoulder such a load should make it a sacred obligation for civilian and military leaders to get our defense policy right. They must be absolutely sure that the commitment is for a cause as honorable as the sacrifice. And with the encouragement of some still in positions of military leadership, I offer a challenge to those still in uniform. A leader's responsibility is to give voice to those who can't or don't have the opportunity to speak. Enlisted members of the armed forces swear their oath to those appointed over them. An officer swears an oath not to a person but to the Constitution, and the distinction is important. To be sure, the Bush administration and senior military officials are not alone in their culpability. Members of Congress from both parties have obviously defaulted in fulfilling their constitutional responsibility for oversight. As you know, many in the media saw the warning signs and heard these cautionary tales before the invasion from wise observers like Central Command Chief Joe Hoare and Tony Zinni, but gave insufficient weight to their views. These are the same news organizations that now downplay both the heroic and the constructive in Iraq. So the thing is, what's to be done now? You know, we need some fresh ideas. We need some fresh faces. That means, as a first step, replacing Rumsfeld and many others unwilling to change their approach. The troops in the Middle East have performed their duty. Now we need people in Washington who can construct some sort of a unified strategy worthy of those troops. It's time to send a signal to our country, our forces, and the world that we're not going to be compromised on our security, and we have to be prepared to rethink how we achieve that security. And it's high time for senior military leaders to throw out caution in expressing their views and ensure the president hears them clearly so that we don't get fooled again. You know, Bush mangled that saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. The American public has been fooled, and Congress has been fooled. And it's just a doggone shame that that we just keep allowing this to happen. We just keep allowing it to happen over and over and over again. And we can't be doing that. We just can't. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Welcome to George Bush National Park, where the air smells just like diesel. And there ain't no animals left around here except snakes, skunks, rats, and weasels. Now we ain't got no waterfalls or rivers. This environment of stuff gives us the shivers. And we don't need Yellowstone or Carlsbad. Cause all the wildlife we need is in the tavern. So welcome to George Bush National Park, where the air smells just like diesel. And there ain't no animals left around here except snakes, skunks, rats, and weasels. Now we sure kicked the ass out of the Constitution, and we made sure our skies were pure pollution. Well, we made the EPA sit on its tushes, and you can't see the forest for the bushes. You ain't got to worry about barking up the wrong tree. We ain't got no trees left to bark up. We ain't got no limit on the hunting you can't do. Cause the only endangered species left is you. Oh, set your tent right up there on the asphalt. We ain't got no grass or filthy soil. Cast your fishing line into the manhole.
salmon full of oil. Welcome to George Bush National Park, where the air smells just like diesel. And there ain't no animals left around here except snakes, skunks, rats, and weasels. No, there ain't no animals left around here except snakes, skunks, rats, and weasels. And a whole lot of bulls.
And maybe a few chicken hawks.
And maybe a few chicken hawks. I love the way he sneaks that in there, just the very end as a little afterthought. I promised I'd read a letter now and then on the air from folks we get great letters from, and this one happens to be a very nice letter. This is from Jerry, and I guess, Jerry, you know who you are, in Cody, Wyoming. Dear Guy, I wanted to take a few moments and thank you for your program. I believe you are the only program that claims to be speaking truth to actually do so. I've listened with amazement to your spot-on analysis of today's political environment, and I'm so pleased to finally hear someone tell the truth about how inept my own Democratic Party is right now. Keep up the terrific job of not only exposing the Republicans for the bunch of immoral thieves they are, but also keep up reminding the Democrats of what they once were and still should be. Well, thank you very much for that. Gosh, I'm blushing. Always good to hear from you. I hear from lots of you every single day. And some of you that have never called the program, take your shot at it. We'll be nice to you. We promise. We'll be nice, unless you're some flaming right-winger that pushes our buttons the wrong way. But, yeah, if you got an opinion on anything we're talking about, we'd love to hear from you. Take a chance. Do it. You know, we got this Iraqi thing coming up, or this Iranian problem, rather. You get to the point where that whole thing melds together over there. But if you're listening closely to it, and I am, you can hear the sounds coming from the Bush administration indicating that some sort of an attack on Iran is coming. And I don't know exactly when, but you know these people, and you know if they're left to their own devices and they can get away with it, this administration will launch an attack on Iran. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, folks, Iran is no Iraq. Iraq is a walk in the park compared to what a war in Iran would bring us. First of all, it'd be flat-out wrong to do it. Secondly, even if it were right, we don't have the military might, the money, nor the national will to do it right now. It'd be a fool's errand, the likes of which this country's never seen before. And all of the pitfalls that were mentioned before we went into Iraq would be there in Iran times 10. We couldn't just walk in and conquer Iran. That wouldn't happen. And although we've already fired the passions of millions of Muslim people by attacking Iraq, you've got to know that the fallout from Bush's misadventure into Iraq would absolutely pale in comparison to a similar action against Iran. If you know anything about the area over there, you know it's well known by experts on the Middle East that a war against Iran would inflame the Muslim world and probably precipitate a holy war the likes of which has never been seen on this entire planet. And yet it seems George Bush is willing to do that. Surely, the American people won't stand for the Bush administration starting another war. But having said that, I see and I hear that the hawks are starting to rattle their sabers once again, and they're starting to push for military action against Iran if it doesn't obey our government's demands. You heard that idiot Bill Kristol. You know, this is insanity. And it's yet another reason why Bush can no longer be trusted to lead this country. It's another reason to relieve him of his duties as president and give those duties to somebody who's first of all, competent, and secondly, capable to handle the job, and somebody that's maybe had some moral authority, somebody that believes that truth is important. You know, this isn't the time to have war powers in the hand of some sort of egomaniac like Junior Bush. This isn't the time to have someone so absolutely mentally incapable of making such important decisions in the command of our nation's military. Here's the part that I just don't understand. Whatever happened to diplomacy? Should we just shut down the State Department? If Condi Rice is so damn good, as the Republicans all say, why isn't the State Department taking a bigger role in all this? You remember back when Kissinger was doing his shuttle diplomacy? Well, isn't this the time for it now, too? Shouldn't Condi Rice be and a delegation from the State Department should be over in that area constantly trying to settle this thing peacefully? Do we even need a State Department during Bush's reign of terror? Have we done anything? Think about this. Have we done anything meaningful in the diplomatic arena since he took office? All he's done is threaten other nations with our military and cause the other nations in the world to think of the United States as some sort of a rogue nation. That's what he has accomplished so far. Anyone care to list the accomplishments of Condoleezza Rice during her tenure as Secretary of State? Other than being Bush's accomplice for the crime of starting his war? Someone want to tell me what she's done concerning statesmanship that's been positive? Nothing that I can see. Nothing at all. I'm not doubting that she's an intelligent woman. I think she is. If she is so intelligent, and if she does have such a good grasp on things as they say she does, why don't they have her over there working this out peacefully? Here's the problem. Bush is calling the shots, or at least his puppet masters are calling them, and they don't give a rat's ass what anybody thinks. They really don't. They really couldn't care less what you think about it. They couldn't care less what the people and governments of other countries around the world care either. They don't care. They are determined to have their way, to do the old smash and grab and steal as much as they can for their progress for a new American century gang. Get as much of it as they can, as much power and money as they can amass in what time that they've got left. You know, the question becomes, when you look at this whole situation, will we have the guts to stop them? Will you help stop them? Will you take to the streets and protest any movement toward another war by this out-of-control government of ours? You know, folks, it comes down to this. If not you, if not me, then who? It's up to us. It really is. And once you all promise me, if they start rattling the sabers at Iran, and it looks like they're going to do it, we've got to take to the streets. We have to. We'll probably be facing some serious problems if we do. I wouldn't put past this Bush administration to have several Kent states on her hands if people rioted and protested against another war. They would do it. They'd do it in a heartbeat, and it wouldn't be a mistake either, like Kent State was. It wouldn't be an accident. These people are scary. They really are. And they need to be reined in. And there's nobody going to rein them in. Now, obviously, the Democrats aren't going to rein them in right now. Not the ones in office. They haven't shown any backbone so far, most of them. There's no reason to think most of them are going to start right now. So it is we, the people, who need to be the example for our elected officials. And maybe if we do it, maybe they can grow a spine as well. We would hope so. So I don't know. It's up to us. It's up to us to get out there and get something done about this mess. Really is. You're listening to The Guy James Show, and we're going to be right back after the news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iran, the government announced it has successfully invaded Iran. Enriched uranium can also be used for the development of nuclear weaponry. Neither Israel nor President Bush have ruled out a preemptive military strike on Iran if Iran cannot prove its intentions are peaceful. Yesterday, hundreds of thousands of immigrants and supporters of immigrant rights demonstrated in cities from New York to Los Angeles, Miami to Anchorage. Congress returned home for its spring break before reconciling the proposed contentious immigrant legislation. In a speech in South Dakota, Newt Gingrich, the former Republican Speaker of the House, startled listeners by saying the U.S. should pull out of Iraq, leaving only a small force there. He called the invasion of Iraq an enormous mistake. In eastern Afghanistan, a rocket slammed into a schoolyard Tuesday, killing 7 students. 14 children were wounded. The school is near a U.S. military base. In Pakistan, a bomb exploded in a park during an outdoor gathering of Sunni Muslims Tuesday. 45 were killed, as many as 100 wounded. In Ramallah, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas announced he wishes to resume peace talks with Israel as soon as a new government was formed. Currently, Israel is shunning the new Hamas government, as are most of the world's most important economies. President Bush and the Justice Department are big winners of the 2006 Jefferson Muzzle Awards, given by a national free speech group to those it says violates the First Amendment. The president topped the list for his domestic spying program. In Maine, the state legislature has adopted a first-of-its-kind law that includes family pets in protective orders against abusive partners. Law enforcement statistics shows there is a direct link between domestic abuse and animal abuse. In California, 7 counties have been declared in a state of emergency following rain-swollen floods. Hundreds of people have been displaced. Rain is expected to continue through the weekend. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
In the latest Vioxx trial, a jury awarded $9 million to a New Jersey man who blamed his heart attack on Merck's popular painkiller. Merck has thousands more lawsuits remaining. Gasoline prices continue to rise 17 cents a gallon in the last 2 weeks. Government analysts say gas could go as high this summer as another 25 cents a gallon. GM will sell its shares in Isuzu to a bank and to Japanese trading companies. The $300 million it makes will help its attempt to stave off bankruptcy in North America. In March, China posted the second highest trade surplus on record, $11.2 billion. Those numbers will be a focus of discussion next week when President Bush meets with Chinese President Hu Jintao. A federal lawsuit claims HCA, the hospital company owned by the family of Senate leader Bill Frist, is being sued in federal court. The suit accuses HCA of slashing staff levels in order to maximize profits. Light sweet crude is $69 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 63 points. The Nasdaq is down 22 points. The S&P 500 is down 9. You can find more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
God bless America.
Let the arm lift,
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back here for the second hour of the program today, the second and final hour, the second half. That's, well, got 54 minutes, a little less than 54 minutes yet. And I'd love to hear from you today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Let's hear from somebody that hadn't called the program for a while. Maybe it'd be your very first time to ever call a radio program. And I promise I'll be gentle with you. Oh, so gentle. Heard him talking about gasoline prices on the news there a few moments ago. Gas prices average $2.65 around the country. How is it where you're at? I know our folks out in California won't have a pretty picture to paint, and it's not so great here either in South Florida. $2.81 for 87 octane regular right now here. $2.81, $2.91, and $3.01 for it's actually more than that. I saw it at $2.87 for regular today, but I got mine for $2.81. Had to go to Miami on business this morning. I'm on the West Coast. They're on the East Coast and get to drive across Alligator Alley. And this time of year, there are alligators galore on Alligator Alley. They're actually on the road. They've got a fence on both sides of the road. But as you're driving across the Everglades, you can look on the banks of the canals on both sides of that and just see alligators, just alligators everywhere. I don't know why today there were so many of them out, but it was an exceptional day for gator watching. Once in a while, if I see one that looks particularly interesting, I'll pull off the side of the road and actually go down to the fence and watch them. And you can see those old gators just kind of eyeing, you know, and say, oh, boy, wouldn't that guy make a good lunch for me today. And there's some of them big enough to take care of you as well. So I wouldn't want to get in the jaws of one of those big 12, 14-foot gators out there. Some of them nasty-looking characters. But $2.81 a gallon. A lot of you driving those driving small cars that don't have such a great big gas tank, 16, 18 gallons or so, and it can cost you $50 to fill up a car nowadays, and even a lot more for some of the SUVs and a bigger truck. Imagine how much fuel a trucker spends in one day. Woo! I'd hate to pay for that. And it's not going to get better anytime soon. Our refineries are going to shut down, they say, for the annual maintenance, and then some of them are changing over to different additives and all that sort of thing. I had someone send me an email a while back blaming the gas thing on our laws. Come on. I'm not going to sit here and say that rules and regulation of EPA and everything haven't affected gas at all, or the availability, or the price. It hadn't affected availability whatsoever. But there are people who will tell you, well, our refining capacity isn't enough. Well, let me ask a question. With $26 billion in profit last year, ExxonMobil, couldn't they afford to take a couple of bucks and build another refinery or two? And don't give me that malarkey about how they couldn't get the permits to do it. Oh, yes, they can. Oh, yes, they can. They can get the permits to build them. And they've got the money to hire all the lawyers they need to get through the process. That's just a lame-o excuse. Plus the fact that there are mothballed refineries in this country that are sitting there doing nothing right now. This way they can keep the price artificially high, and they will continue to keep it high. The question I have for everybody is, I know those of you that have to drive, and we all have to drive a certain amount, But those of you that already spend a significant amount of money on gas being 37 to 40%, 40 cents a gallon more than it was last year at this time, and God knows that was high enough. It was, what, 2 years ago that it was about $1.37, right about this time? That's what I'm thinking it was, about 2 years ago. Then they got us used to paying $2 a gallon. You notice how they do that in little plateaus? Everybody took a deep breath, and it got to $2 a gallon and went, oh, man. And then it dropped back down a little bit. You see this little game they play? It dropped back down to $1.60, $1.70. Hovered around $1.60 for a while. Then it started inching up again. And then they had Katrina, and it got way up there again. Then it dropped back again. They always take two steps forward and one back, but always upward. The general trend is always upward. And I sure do not feel sorry for the gas companies. There's no need for a company to be making $26 billion last year. But the question I was going for here is, how high will gas have to go before, A, you just can't afford it anymore and you've got to seek an alternative, maybe some carpooling, and B, how high does it have to go before you'll go out and spend the money to buy a more energy efficient vehicle or an alternative fuel vehicle? How high does it have to go before, I mean, you'll have to admit, we've all just been paying it. And there hasn't been any huge hue and cry come from the public. Oh, yeah. When they go out to the gas stations and interview people, every time it gets up, and, you know, now it's $3 some places. They'll interview a few people and they say, oh, I don't like it, I don't. But that's as much as, nothing more than that happens. And people say, what's the use? And I agree. But how high does it have to go before it really starts taking food off of your table and keeping you from doing the things you want to do? How high will it go before you'll just have to give in and drastically change your lifestyle? I wonder how far it would have to go for that. I'm close to that. I don't, $2.81, I filled my vehicle up today, and it was, what, $47? That's a lot of dough for a tank of gas. Not even a full tank of gas, so I wonder. Love to hear your views on that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I did want to tell everybody, you know, we purposely did not talk about the marches yesterday because I figured we're going to let all the big boys cover that for us, and they did. And I've got to think that Bush has been so damn glad to have that happen yesterday, that march. The timing of it was perfect for him. It took Leakgate off the front page for a day or so. And the immigration marches even spilled over into today. It was a major story. But here in Southwest Florida, and let's take Fort Myers, for example, they expected, and I didn't hear this any place but locally here today in Fort Myers, they expected 20,000 for the march. Now, I thought, I got to be honest, when I heard 20,000 for the march for immigration, I thought, wow. Wow, 20,000. I mean, they don't have crowds for anything like that around here. 20,000 people were going to show up for the thing. Do you know how many really showed up? The police are estimating it conservatively at 75,000. 75,000 people in what is, by many people's standards, a medium to small-sized community. 75,000 people. I was shocked when I saw the pictures of it and the reports. And you know the great thing about it? No trouble at all. Nobody was arrested. There was even some counter-protesters going to try and cause a little trouble, and the police didn't let them get away with it. And it was just peaceful, uneventful, other than the fact that they got their message out. And I don't think there was any great loss of services or anything around here yesterday. I think everybody was very respectful about it. You know, there are interesting views being presented by the people in this immigration problem right now. I heard several gentlemen being interviewed saying that there should be no borders. I guess they liked John Lennon's old song, Imagine. No borders. They're saying America is America, from the tip of South America to the tip of North America, that we should all be Americans and it shouldn't be borders and we all have a right to this land. Well, I'm not so sure I agree with all that. But it was interesting to hear some people's views on that. That's a rather radical view, I think. And then I heard the Laura Ingrams and those folks talk about, you know, there are people serious about building a fence. I sure think that's not the answer. Building a fence is not the answer. At no time, it seems to me, do Americans, the American government, ever look at working at the root of these problems. And once again, just like in a significant part of the problem in the Middle East, the problem in Mexico and Central America and South, and some of the South American countries, is poverty. It's poverty. I don't know what kind of a dent we can put in the poverty in the Mexican nation. I don't know. I'm not an economist. But it would seem to me that, you know, militaries and fences and all that sort of thing's not the answer. It would seem to me that some sort of humanitarian work and working on the poverty, which is the root cause of it, let's face it, people wouldn't be flocking here if they could make a decent living where they live. And I do not blame people for doing that. I would hope they'd all do it in a legal manner. Obviously, some people haven't. But, you know, you see that idiot Congressman Tancredo from Colorado saying we ought to round them all up and send them back. You're going to round up 12 million people and imagine the problems that would cause with some families. Some illegals that have been here and their children have been born here, and so their children are legally American citizens and the parents are not. Would you send the parents back and let the children stay? Would you break up the families that way? I understand that this is a huge problem. I know that it is. I know that states like Arizona, New Mexico, California are suffering mightily because of the huge influx of illegal immigrants. I see that side of it. I see the social programs in those states being taxed to the limit, the health care programs, the hospitals, the schools. I understand that. That's even affected the area where we live here. There is a significant Latino, Hispanic, whatever you want to use, a significant population here. And I know some people who are terribly resentful of the Hispanic community, even here where I live. And I've said it before, and I'll always say it, they're the most wonderful people, as a people. To be sure, there are elements in the Hispanic community that are not good. There are most certainly elements in the Anglo community that are not good. In every community you want to look at around the world, there are your bad elements. But as a whole, the Hispanic people, my take on it is they're a wonderful people. They're great family people. They're hard-working people. Take care of their kids. That's number one. And so I'm not going to condemn those folks for wanting to come in this country and make a better life for them. Problems? You bet. There are problems with it. And somebody smarter than myself is going to have to figure out the answer to it. But I know the answer is not building a fence. That much I believe offense is not the answer. There are people in this country that would shoot them as they came across the border. Something's got to be done. I don't know what it is, but there are a lot of smart people in this country, and I don't see why that cooler heads can prevail and just get together and hash this out and make some sort of a law that's acceptable to the great masses of people. I certainly hope so, because problem's not going to get any better. Hey, let's go to the phones. Who do we got? Who's on the phone?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay.
I got a couple of jokes that Jay Leno told about the aliens or whatever. What do they call them?
Oh, the illegal aliens?
Illegal aliens.
Uh-huh.
And I think they have the Ring of Truth. The one he told was about the guy jumping over the fence at the White House four times.
Oh, yeah. I heard about
heard about that?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and they're talking about building a fence to keep all the aliens out. And it's something to think about. And then another one that he told about, he said that, well, you know, he said, George Bush says Americans don't want to do these jobs, so does that mean when these people come over here and they become citizens, then we'll have to have some more people come over to take their place in the jobs that the Americans don't want to do?
And there's a thought, once they become Americans.
Something to think about?
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to, I found a speech yesterday afternoon on that Franklin Delano Roosevelt made before the Congress in 1941 about four freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
And if I send you that by email, would you read it if I send you some of the...
I certainly would. That is a wonderful speech.
Amazing.
Yes, it is. That's I've read the Four Freedoms speech. It is it's an American treasure. I mean, there just isn't any doubt about it.
And it just could apply to today if only we had the right leadership.
Yes. Yes, most
and,
certainly.
I was thinking about just maybe sending some excerpts of it in the top part, you know.
Yeah, please do. Send me some of that, and it'll save me looking it up. But
okay.
Those of you that have never read any of the Four Freedoms speech, you should. It's
that was my first time.
Ah, well, it's...
And I just happened to find it. I mean, it was in a site all by itself, all by its lonesome. I know I was looking up the Four Freedoms because the man that spoke at the... Norman Rockwell.
Yes.
Because of the man that spoke up at one of his meetings, they said he looked just like one of the Norman Rockwell paintings.
Ah. Yeah, well, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, and I'm told that he wrote most of his speeches himself.
Oh, this is brilliant.
He is a man with a brilliant mind and a wonderful heart. And
it's long, too.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and there's no doubt he was the consummate politician. He's very much the politician, too. But
my parents, he saved their lives, you know.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people with
the South, people lost, you know. They were all Georgia farmers, and they just lost everything.
Oh, sure.
They ended up in Florida.
Right, right.
And they came down here. They were working in the agriculture, you know. Just like, Americans do those kind of jobs.
Well, you know, that's interesting you bring it up, Juanita, the idea that that jobs Americans won't do. I think that's baloney. My own mother, now that you bring it up, my own mother was from my mother and father are both from very, very large families.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is from a family of 13. And, you know, she was one of those Depression children.
Uh-huh.
And her family had a restaurant, and they lost the restaurant during the Depression.
Yeah.
They baked pies. They baked bread. They went door to door with their Red Flyer wagon loaded with pies and bread and sold it to survive. And people will still do things like that in this country if they have to. And, things were tough. I think that scarred a lot of people. The Depression scarred a lot of people, and they never got over it. I think everybody knows somebody that perhaps was the age of my mother.
The things my folks told. My daddy always told tales from school, you know, about all things, and there was he always told it with a sense of humor, and it's amazing some of the things that they went through.
Oh, yeah, and the hand-me-downs from a large family all the way down, and by the time they always made the joke that the socks had been darned so many times by the time they got down to the youngest that they were two sizes smaller than they were when they started out, you know.
Oh, I never heard that. That's cute.
Yeah, and eating fried mush, and, you know, people got by, but...
Yeah.
That was a tough time, but a lot of those people were scarred for life from that time. I know my mother... God rest her soul. She I used to think some things she did was peculiar, and when I got old enough to remember or to know better, I thought it's because she lived through the Depression, and mm-hmm. once she got a hold of something, like, for example, when I was a kid, in our house we had enough groceries for an army. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, a huge freezer full of meat mm-hmm. and cupboards mm-hmm. full of canned goods and just enough food to last for months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of that. It was because she was so yeah. deprived that, you know, she was going to hoard things and be ready for an emergency. And that's, you know, those depression scars that people have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I hope we don't okay. go through that again.
Oh, me too. There, it would be so different now.
Yeah.
I mean, because back then you could go in the orange groves and eat oranges, and now you get shot.
Yeah.
And you could raise plants, and now, you know, there's so much pollution, and you could you could go fishing, but now you better have a license.
That's right. And in rural America, you're exactly right. Rural America is not what it was then.
No.
And everybody that back then grew, you know, all the food that they mm-hmm. needed out in the country, but nowadays it's all the big corporate farms that have taken over everything, and
right.
there aren't the little guys there were around anymore. Juanita, right. thanks for your call. It's good to hear
okay.
from you.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you. There are people who think we're headed for a disaster economically in this country right now. And, my God, I hope not. There are some disturbing signs going on right now. Everybody that jumped on the low interest rates here a while back and got the adjustable rate mortgages, there's some people starting to suffer real bad on account of some of those. Interest rates are jumping up, and there are a lot of people finding out that those adjustable rate mortgages weren't such a great thing, and their house payments, and this, of course some of them have caps on them that they can only go so high, but some of them don't. And people out of work, people losing their job, energy prices sky high, food's going higher than it was because of trucking, and the energy prices has, it's just snowballed all the way through our economy, and it's not over with yet. I hate to think what might happen if our economy gets as bad as some people say it might. I don't know. 866-546-5254. I want to hear from you this afternoon. I heard Bush talking again yesterday. Damn it, every time he says this, I just bristle, and I know you do too. I've heard from enough of you that I know that you just hated it as well when he says that he's a war president. And I think the thing that offends me most about Bush Jr. is the fact that he walks around proclaiming constantly that he's a quote, war president. He seems to be so damn proud of that fact. Beside all the lying and the corruption and the incompetence of his administration, it's him crowing that he's a war president that just makes me want to jump through the TV and grab him. And he loves to say, he uses the words, I think he used the word enemy 18 times in his speech yesterday. He likes to say, we are at war. I don't know about you, but the only people I'm at war with are Junior Bush and his immoral, incompetent administration. We've invaded a sovereign nation that had done nothing to us. We dismantled its army. We killed untold thousands of innocent civilians and others who feel that they were defending their country against the invading American military. My question is this really war? Think about that. Is this really war? To be at war, shouldn't our country be under the gun, at risk of being invaded? And to imply that this is the case, particularly with Iran right now, that's patently absurd, and it was with Iraq as well. To be a nation at war, there should be sacrifice. And the sacrifice ought to be spread amongst all of the citizens. We should all be suffering some sort of hardship from the war, and that is not the case, and you know it's not the case. There's a very small percentage of Americans who are at war right now, and that percentage includes those who have been propagandized by the Bush administration into believing Saddam was sitting on a mountain of WMDs and was ready to destroy our country at the drop of a hat. And it also includes those hawks who always enjoy a good fight to prove that the good old U.S. of A. can take names and kick ass anytime they want to. You all know those people. That includes people like Bush and Cheney and most of their friends who haven't been to war but don't mind sending others to die and do their dirty work for them. And the percentage of those who are at war also includes, tragically, tens of thousands of young American men and women who have sworn to obey the commands of the commander-in-chief. And I hate saying that as well. I think commander is hardly a term that should be applied to Bush Jr. Leaker-in-chief, maybe. Maybe liar-in-chief, but certainly not commander-in-chief. The word commander just does not seem to fit him somehow. But getting back to what we were saying here, war involves sacrifice. Remember during the Second World War, there was rationing, and there was all kinds of sacrifice. And other than our young men and women in the military and their family, who's making the sacrifice? I'll tell you someone else who's going to make a sacrifice. Our kids and grandkids are making a sacrifice, and they don't even know it yet. The debt that's piling up because of this war is going to cause a financial catastrophe in future times in the form of much higher taxes or much lower benefits. And, of course, the latter, the lower benefits, it plays right into the hands of those who want to do away with any government retirement or health benefits whatsoever. They really do see this as a chance to Grover Norquist of the world, see this as a chance to starve both Social Security and Medicare. And they're happy about this. And if you don't believe me, ask Grover Norquist, who, by the way, was announced last week before. He's now officially an advisor to Junior Bush, Grover Norquist. So I guess the reason I'm saying all this, the next time Junior Bush gets in front of the camera and starts that we're at war crap, ask yourself who is at war. Who's benefiting from his war? Can you see any benefit whatsoever for anyone? Anyone other than Bush and his evil cabal? And of course, if you can answer that question honestly, you can only come to one conclusion. No one other than Bush and friends have benefited one iota from this disastrous war of his. No one. Not the Iraqis. No one. The nation of Iraq has suffered mightily. The United States is suffering mightily and going to suffer some more. There is nothing good to come of our occupation of Iraq right now. Nothing good to come whatsoever. I hope people will start to realize that. I really hope they do. It's just, I don't know. It's hard for me to understand sometimes that people just don't get it. They really don't. It's disturbing. It is. You're listening to the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you. Hope you give us a call and let us know what's on your mind today. We'd like to hear from you. We're going to take a break. I must admit, I played a little cut yesterday that somebody sent me, and I got a huge response from it. And everybody's saying, please, 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 please play that again. So I'm going to do it for you right now. I think you'll recognize this.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. See you squirm, see you perspire. Not a word you say is true. There's never been one out of you. Smoke and mirrors, bathing switch. You and your friends are getting rich. Picking pockets and pulling strings. And other more despicable things. Liar, liar, pants on fire. preaching only to the choir. Photo op in front of the steeple. How did you manage to fool these people? You talk the lingo, dress the part, even put your hand over your heart. Bomber jacket, emperor's clothes. You can't even reach the end of your nose. Chain of command doesn't get any higher. Orders come down from the top. Punish the guy that pushes the mop. Throw away the key, forget about bail. Likes of you ought to rot in jail. Guilty, guilty of the highest crimes and the lowest ones at the very same time. Liar, liar. Pants on fire. Chain of command doesn't get any higher. Orders come down from the top. Punish the guy that pushes the mop. Throw away the key. Forget about bail. Likes of you ought to rot in jail. Guilty, guilty of the highest crimes and the lowest ones at the very same time. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. There, I hope you enjoyed that. You asked for it, you got it. I tell you, every once in a while, someone just sends us a little ditty that they wrote and recorded, and I think that one, well, I guess you all know who he's talking about. Hey, speaking of politicians, how many of you go out to the mailbox now and then? And you get one of these handy-dandy little letters like I got yesterday. How many of you get one of those, and I guess maybe last week, maybe you all got one. How many of you got one of those dear friend letters from the Democrats last week? Dear friend? I did, and I have to admit, every time I open one of those pathetic letters, I'm sorry, but I read those with wonderment because whoever writes them must be living in fantasy land. They always describe our Democratic leaders like Pelosi and Reid as, quote, fighting for something. Fighting for something. Come again? Democrats fighting for something? You know, the question begs to be asked, fighting for what? Does anyone in the Democratic leadership want to step up into reality for a few moments and list all the things these present day Democratic leaders have fought for, not given lip service to, but fought for? Come on, man, I resent those letters, and I just got one yesterday. You know, start with the biggest problem we got right now: the war. How many Democrats fought against going to war? Damn few. Who amongst the Democratic leadership fought against it? Nobody. Let me answer that for you. Nobody. Fighting for something? Again, another question begs to be asked. How many Democrats have had the guts to stand up and, quote, fight alongside of Russ Feingold for his censure motion? How many? How many? How many Democrats, I hate to use that word, how many Democrats fought against both of Bush's Supreme Court appointees? Oh, sure. Sure, there's a few that paid, minimal lip service to it, a little protest. But when push came to shove regarding this much ballyhooed filibuster that might take place, who was up for it? Hardly anybody. That's our Democrats. How many Democrats stood up against the immoral bankruptcy bill? Obviously not nearly enough. How many Democrats fought hard, I mean hard, against this simpleton of a president's stem cell research position? And how many Democrats have fought against the continued support for this war? How many of them stood up and said, no, sir, we're going to cut the funds off from this war, thereby ending it now? How many have done that? You know the answer. So I guess what I'm getting at here, to use the term when you get those letters, when you get the term, you know, here, that fighting to describe this bunch of Democrats in Congress right now is absolutely laughable. Yep, there are some exceptions, but damn few. I'm gonna tell you about one of my pet peeves right now. I wish some of you could hear the conversations I have with the offices of some of the Democratic House members and Democratic senators about coming on the show and defending some of their votes on these matters. I'm right up front with them. I tell them I'm not gonna ambush anybody. I call them and tell them the truth of why I want to talk to them and see if they come on the show and want to talk to you, the faithful. You, the hardcore activist. You, the foundation of the Democratic Party. I call them and I ask them to come on the show. I remember back when the bankruptcy bill was going, I called and asked some of them to be on the show. Oh, no. I had a much better chance of winning the lotto than getting any of them that voted against that to come on and talk about it. You never heard such waffling. I called Joe Biden's office, and I've met Joe Biden several times, and he's an all right guy. But the consummate politician, the kind of politician that, well, I called his office, and I asked him to come on and defend his vote on that bankruptcy bill. And oh, yeah, he appeared all over TV with Russert and Tweety Bird and others talking about his vote, but he knew damn well that they would, and they did, show him the usual softball of a question that those guys, lob at him. They know, he knows, that they will not get in his face. Because, oh, Joe, he wants to be on every show he can get on. There's nobody more available to the press than Joe Biden, and he knows damn well if he goes in front of any of those guys, they're gonna throw softballs at him, and they're not going to question him hard. They're not going to give him a hard time. He's not going to have to explain his votes. They give them the usual political BS, and they accept that. He could get his FaceTime on those programs without having to really explain what a betrayal his vote was to the average Joe American. And he knows full well that by appearing on my show, he'd have to give straight answers to tough questions, or he'd go away looking like the political equivalent of cotton candy. That's a strange analogy, cotton candy, but I think you know what I mean. When you're a kid, you go to the county fair and you see this great big ball of cotton candy on that cone, and you're so excited about it, but when you bite into it, you find out that cotton candy is more satisfying to the eye than your palate or your stomach. There's just not much there, and so it is with the Joe Bidens of our party. There's lots of them. I've been saying for a long time now, and many of you know that I've been saying for a long time now that our party, the Democrats, are in need of our own contract with America. I'll give Gingrich his due on that. I thought that was a great idea, both politically and possibly for the benefit of America. But we need our own contract with America, a contract that they pledge to keep or not run for re-election if they don't keep it. Where is this bold, proactive agenda the Democrats have been promising? Anybody know? Does that lousy excuse of some sort of an edict they passed out a couple of weeks ago, does that count? You all saw it. Basically, his message was, we're going to do better. Better how? That's the question, how? You know, they come on and say, we're going to do better. My God. There are kids in the fourth grade that can do better than that. But of course, the politicians don't want to do better than that. They don't want to let anybody know what they're going to do, because they're not going to do anything. There's only one way to get these people that you're going to get these people to understand what we Democrats want of them, and that's to get the hell out of Washington, get away from the political consultants and the other politicians, and talk and listen to the everyday people, to you. They'd get an earful, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they, though? Those of you who have to be out here buying groceries every day and paying for that $2.81 a gallon gas or whatever it is where you live, those of you that have trouble paying the electric bill and get your paycheck and wondering how you're going to get by for another week or another month, if they'd come out here amongst the real people, they'd get an earful. They'd find out what they should hear. It wouldn't be from the consultants, and I can't stand those people. I just can't stand those people. They need to come out here to the grassroots and talk to the real people. And, you know, sure, it's fun to celebrate Tom DeLay's departure. It's interesting to watch the Bush administration self-destruct. It's appropriate to toss your enemy an anchor when he's drowning, but you got to be ready to assume the responsibility of running the government with some bold and dynamic leadership that will actually address the problems of the people. Just talking about it isn't enough. These Republicans who've got the power right now have totally succeeded in marginalizing the party's own base in the eyes of its timid and compromised leaders as being too fervent, too far to the left. And that's no small task, knowing that the religious right is whacked out as you can get. But how else can you explain the complete and utter absence of Democratic leaders at the huge anti-war march last September? You remember that in Washington? I'll never forget it. You see, the DNC's got this brand new office building that they built. Bragged about it, all the money they got. Terry McAuliffe was ahead. They built this big new fancy headquarters. Nice. Real nice. And they got a new radio studio in there. And they got a TV studio. And they got everything in there. And they've invited, they send you these things. I guess we're supposed to get down and grovel and bow to them and all that. Give them their homage, pay homage to them. Oh, thank you for inviting me to the DNC building. And they invited everybody to come and use their, everybody had a progressive. They won't call us liberals. They're afraid that's a dirty word. You won't hear the DNC saying that. We're all progressives, you know. Well, I'll say it. They sent letters out to everybody that's a progressive or what I am, a liberal broadcaster, and invited them to come do their shows at the DNC headquarters. Anytime you want, just come on in, you can do your show, we'll schedule it in. I found out that weekend of that war protest that they meant any time I wanted except the weekend of the anti-war protest because they didn't want to be associated with it in any way, shape, or form, and they told me so. After a lot of prodding and probing, they finally told me the truth, why that I couldn't use the studio that weekend. Because they were too damn cowardly to say they supported that anti-war demonstration. Imagine that. The Democratic National Committee, with not enough guts to say they backed the anti-war movement in this country. Now, isn't that a shame? I believe it is. That's a real shame. You talk about the best example of showing cowardice. I think that's it right there. Oh, sure. Absolutely. There were elements of that weekend that I didn't want to be associated with. But are we that poorly spoken that we can't differentiate ourselves from those people that we don't want to associate with? Are we that poorly spoken? Can't we get our message out? But they were afraid. They didn't want anything to do with that. And that was after days and days and days of asking, why? Why can't I use the studio that weekend? They wouldn't give me an answer. And finally, well, you see, they knew I was going to bug them until they told me the truth. And when they finally did, I was outraged. And I got to tell you, I haven't had a word with those people since. Because I don't have any respect left for them. I don't. That is a group of people, by and large, and I'm not going to include Howie in on that, because I think he's doing an admirable job. But by and large, the DNC is a group of people that's there for the DNC people, by the DNC people, and the whole ball of wax. It's a self-perpetuating group that wants to take care of themselves. Bunch of people that trying to run politics the old-fashioned way. I sometimes wonder if they even give a damn if we take power back. Oh, yeah, they probably do, because then things are much better for them than being out of power. But I'm fascinated to watch them, and I'm sure that people not liking what I'm saying right now about that. But if they came out here, the politicians came out here in the grassroots and talked to people, they would find out that there's a huge gap between them and their base right now. Wouldn't you love to sit down and have a heart-to-heart with your congressman? They need to get out of D.C. and talk to everyone they can, and if they do, they'll surely hear the outrage and the despair and the disappointment that is out here among the voting public right now. People are not only enraged, they're not only angry, but they're deeply worried. They're deeply worried about their economic situation, about the economic situation of the entire country. It's going to trickle down to everybody. I don't know. It's that attitude by our so-called Democratic leaders that's got to stop. We have to stop accepting such a timid, cowardly, weasel-like behavior by our own people. We really got to demand that they carry out our wishes rather than the wishes of those who dump millions into their campaign funds, and that's what it's all about. It's time for us to get serious about holding their feet to the fire, and the best way I know how to do it is to deny them the money they so desperately want from us. Those letters that I mentioned about at the opening of my little rant about this, those dear friend letters. It's simple. Really? No representation, no money. No money, no re-election. It's simple. That's the only way you can get these people to talk turkey. You got to hit them in the pocketbook, I guess, because they're not listening to us. You know they're not listening to us. That's the cold hard fact. They are not listening to us right now. If they were, to quote them, they would actually be, quote, fighting for something we want instead of what they think we want. Isn't it just great that a few, I guess damn few, of our elected Democrats seem to have woken up now, at least for a couple of days. I beat on them all the time. And it's really cool that they want to investigate whether or not the administration manipulated intelligence in the run-up to the Iraq War. There's a few brave ones that'll stand up, Democrats. Does anyone who's been paying attention for the last 3 years have the slightest doubt about the answer to that question? Was the intelligence manipulated? And for God's sake, don't kid yourself for 1 second, even if it were established beyond all doubt, that Bush and his cronies lied through their teeth, proven so strongly that maybe even the right-wing maniacs who are convinced that Bush is the noblest leader since Jesus Christ walked to the earth, even if they had to admit it, do you think it would get our troops out of Iraq any faster? Of course it wouldn't. Almost every establishment politician and intellectual maintains that we've got some sort of a moral obligation to stay in Iraq until the situation is, and to use their word, stabilized, or until a real democracy miraculously springs forth, or until who the hell knows. And every single politician in Washington is terrified of suggesting anything like a quick withdrawal. That would be, to quote so many of them, that would be weak, showing weakness. That would be a victory for the terrorists. Oh, they've worn that phrase out. The U.S. would be defeated once again after Vietnam. We swore we'd never lose another war. Well, I guess it should teach you should never say never, because we've certainly lost this one. Oh, we can't have that. Well, never mind that we're being defeated at every single additional day that the occupation continues. Most of the rest of the world knows it. Somehow the news seems to have filtered through everywhere except here at home. And I don't mean to make light of the moral problem at all. We invaded a country that didn't deserve us. They didn't threaten us. They didn't deserve what we've done to them. We occupied Iraq for no justifiable reason whatsoever. That country is now a disaster. It's veering closer and closer into an all-out civil war with every day that passes. And we do bear a heavy responsibility for that. The dilemma remains. It really does. And Gene Healy, a guy I like to read his writing, he wrote in a recent article, opponents of leaving Iraq point out that we have a moral obligation to Iraq. We broke it and now we've bought it. This point is compelling and difficult to face. It is indeed awful that so many Iraqis are suffering as a result of the war and might suffer more if we left. But is there a ceiling on the cost we should be willing to pay to fulfill that obligation? You know, the way I see the question is, can we fulfill it? Muddling through is simply not a policy, especially when it brings with it some serious risk that maybe 5-10 years from now we'll be in the same position we're in right now with several thousand more Americans dead. Remember Vietnam, anyone? The dying just continued on and on. And when you look at this administration's public statements, they have no realistic plan for victory in Iraq. And without a victory strategy, there's only one alternative. And we've said this all along, an exit strategy. And it's way past time that we develop one. So far, the Democrats have proven they don't even have the minimal wisdom to come up with a specific plan for leaving Iraq. I think the one John Kerry just came up with is the best I've heard. But most of them are incapable of leading on this issue. And if some Democrats think we ought to leave Iraq as soon as feasible, how do they define feasible? And what the hell is the plan? I think a lot of them expect an exit strategy to drop miraculously from the sky somehow. They shouldn't be surprised if voters still hesitate to embrace them this year. Unless, of course, those voters are sufficiently disgusted by the Bush gang, and it looks like they are. It really appears that what the Democrats are counting on, the Democrats' campaign this year, you know, their saying is going to be, you know, they're disgusting, and you're not sure about us yet. that's the way it looks to me. You know, face it, the Democrats took over both houses of Congress, if they did, this year. And the White House in 2008, we're still going to be in Iraq 10 years and maybe 20 years from now. Why do you think they built those enduring bases over there? And most of the Democrats keep voting for funding those bases. We hope we won't have 150,000 troops in Iraq in 5 years, maybe only 30 or 40,000, but they'll still be there in 2015. I'll bet you on that right now. But none of that's what I want to discuss at the moment. I, as profoundly disastrous as the Bush foreign policy has been and continues to be, what will determine the future of our country is whether the basic constitutional principles, which have maintained this great country for over 200 years, whether those principles continue to be maintained here domestically. The foreign threat is intimately tied to the developments here at home that ought to concern us. The enemy outside is always used. Always they use the enemy outside to restrict and undermine the liberties here at home, and that's what's happening. You know it is. But it's those restrictions and outright attacks here in the United States, the ways in which individual rights and personal freedom are really being almost fatally undermined. They're being largely ignored. And this business of Bush overriding Congress and the courts, that's just a start. Just you wait and see. Hey, I'd like to thank you for being with us today. We talked a lot today, and you talked a little bit today. Always good to have you along with us. Want to remind you all that you've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. You'll be back. We'll be back tomorrow with another Guy James Show. Thanks.